This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
I'm Noomi Gilder.
I'm Harriet Taylor.
And you're listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief.
Our picks of this week's tech headlines.
And what we think of them.
We're aiming for 50% informative, 50% fun.
Let's dive in.
Hello, you're listening to another episode of Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief. I'm Noomi Gilder.
I'm Harriet Taylor.
And welcome to this week's episode. How are you, Harriet?
I'm really good today. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I feel like we've got some meaty topics today.
I feel like a lot has happened in the last week. Like, even choosing these, I'd seen quite a few decent ones. So it's been a hard cut.
Yeah, it was a hard pick this week. There was a lot that we could have talked about. So any complaints, you can forward them to our Instagram. We won't read it.
It can just go to our others.
What have we got first?
So up first, we're going to talk about, it's a big story at the moment, the Bitcoin hack. Now,
oh yeah,
I feel like there's been stuff like this over the years, and obviously we used to hear in like film stories about like bank robberies and stuff. Mm-hmm. This feels like the modern day era, yeah, of like that type of stuff, you know. And crypto scams seem to be rife at the moment, but this one is bigger than the other ones I've heard about. It basically, cryptocurrency firm Bybit, I'm going to say you pronounce it, said hackers stole $1.5 billion worth of digital currency in what could be the biggest crypto theft in history.
That is a crazy amount of money.
And also, how do they even do this? So let's see if it explains. So the company's based in Dubai, and it told the users that the funds were safe and that would refund any of those affected. So they must have a lot of either liquid cash or crypto to sort that out. And apparently it was stolen from its Ethereum coin digital wallet. So it wasn't a Bitcoin theft, this one. It was Ethereum.
Yeah, and that's like the second largest cryptocurrency, isn't it?
Yeah. So apparently Bybit holds $20 billion, which is dollars, which is the equivalent of $15 billion in assets. So they can afford to pay this back. And apparently the hackers exploited security features and then transferred the money to an identified address. Now, I have a friend who got crypto scammed once.
Oh, wow.
And it was the most ridiculous thing that happened. Like, I've had friends who've been part of rug pulls and stuff like that, but I'm not going to name who it was because I don't know if he still feels a type of way about it. But over lockdown, me, my brother and some of his friends got proper into like crypto. And like, I was even trying to code some crypto coins at one point.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, so you can use wallets to transfer and hold your funds. And there's like extensions that you can add on Chrome to, you know, like have everything in one place. And you need to have a secret word to access it. Now, what he did was he downloaded a extension that wasn't legit and put in his secret word so that people could go in and just take all of his money. Well, all of his like crypto. So it makes me wonder if they've done something similar, considering they could transfer all of that money. Like, have they got some sort of like pass key that someone's accidentally input somewhere? This is why phishing is so like such a big thing.
And yeah.
You got to be careful.
They said that the scale of the theft exceeds the previous record, which was $620 million or £490 million that happened in 2022. I mean, yeah, it's like doubled that.
I can't comprehend that amount of money. Imagine being the person that pulls off something like that and then you just got one over $1 billion.
What I find interesting, though, about crypto, though, is like, if I was, and I'm not going to say that I am, and I'm not incriminating myself, but if I was going to commit a crime, I do still think I'd try and go for like actual money rather than crypto, because it's still like, how easily accessible is the wealth of that cryptocurrency, you know, now that they have it? Like, how easily are they going to be able to actually...
How do you get access to your money?
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely ways. And like, I know we say we try and regulate it, but like when we were doing that, like a few years ago, it was still the Wild West. It was before they got all of these... it was before they could even work out how to tax it, basically.
Wow.
Whereas now there's a lot more controls in place. I think Binance had lots of issues as well. I can't remember if that shut down in the end or what, if they had to sort of put more formalities in place for people reporting what they were buying or selling. But there's definitely like a dark web of crypto where you could, I'm not condoning it, but where you could probably clean all of your money if you needed to. So I guess that's one of them.
Yeah.
I wonder what they're going to do with it.
We'll probably never know, because if they did ever tell us, then they are terrible criminals.
do you think they'll get it back? Like, what do you think is going
to
happen?
I don't think so. I can't imagine it would be easy to track it.
Yeah.
It depends on what they exploited. But if they've said it's an unidentified address, then I imagine it's quite hard to find out where it's going.
Yeah.
I don't personally know enough about crypto. Is there like the equivalent of like a watermark or like a serial number associated with, a particular amount of cryptocurrency that they could say, oh, that amount is from... Like, is there a way that they can track that?
I mean, potentially, yeah, but there's no way to police it.
Yeah.
Like, say someone's got a Bitcoin that you've robbed at that point, how do you even get it back? It's one of them. Like, I don't know, unless they come up with a way of being like, right, it's a robbed Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like,
you
ban
can't
it from being
this.
In circulation.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't think you can do that. I think the only way they're going to find out who did this is if they track how the security risk happened, how it got breached, and maybe follow that loose end.
Yeah.
Because I think other crypto scams where they have found who did it, it's usually someone in the company that's sort of like taking funds. I can't remember. There was one that happened a few years ago, or maybe it was like the end of last year, and it was one of the big companies, and the guy who ran it basically got done for fraud.
Oh, wow.
Essentially taking the customer's
money,
assets. So usually when you hear stories that involve quite a lot of money like that, it's someone on the inside.
We're not implying that in this case, by the way.
No.
No lawyers coming for us.
It sounds like this one might not be, because it says they've exploited security features.
Yeah.
So
interesting. I do think there is a lot more development that needs to be done, like not only technologically for making this type of currency more secure, but also like in policy and regulation. It feels like we're quite, far behind with it on how to make sure that it's being used safely, that it's being, taxed and recorded, that it's trackable in the same way that we've built these financial systems to do that with, like sterling and credit.
I'm just ready for a film about this type of stuff.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
It's not good, but like, I feel like it'd help explain it a bit more.
The Italian job, but
for crypto.
Yeah, just a guy hacking. I'm in. The thing is, though, with a crypto heist movie, I don't think it would be as visually exciting, because you're not going to have people trying to fill a van with loads of money, or like trying to crack a safe or whatever. It is just going to be, let's be honest, a guy in a hoodie on a laptop in a dark room tapping away.
Hey, people watch Mr. Robot, right? I'm sure they'll find a way.
It's true. It's true. Okay, let's move on to the next story, which is, again, big news this week. And I haven't personally used this feature, so I didn't really know much about it until, the news came out this week where it's like, well, no, you can't use it. So Apple have stopped the use of their advanced data protection tool for UK customers. So first of all, what is that? Let's have a little bit of a backstory, because I didn't know, so I've had to learn. I think it's basically about how Apple protects our data. Now, obviously, a lot of our data is encrypted anyway when stored in iCloud. There's standard encryption by default. And if the company is ordered by law enforcement to hand over that data, then they can and they will.
Yeah.
They will, follow those orders. But they've also created this tool called Advanced Data Protection, which is an opt-in security tool that allows you to have end-to-end encryption. It's like an extra level of protection, which means Apple can't see or access the data, only the user can. And basically, because Apple doesn't have a key to this encryption, you could lose your data. There's no way of getting your data back. So that's why, there is kind of like a risk of using this. But it also means that no one else has a way of accessing the data, including law enforcement agencies. And I think that the reason why this has all started was basically the Home Office in the UK was like, you need to give us access to this data. You know, I can see where they're coming from like a law enforcement security point of view of like, you know, maybe if they were investigating someone and they wanted to access that data for an investigation and they couldn't, then fair enough. But they've asked for this key. Apple haven't been able to give it to them because that's not how the tool works. And basically they've said, well, we're just going to turn the tool off for UK users.
So I guess it's one of them where if they have to comply with a request, right, and they literally have no other way to, I don't know, it sounds like it'd be a lot of work for them, right?
Yeah, and also kind of, I think, against the purpose of the tool. Like, the whole point of it is that your data can't be accessed by anyone. So it'd be a bit weird if Apple was like, okay, but we'll put a backdoor in for the cops. So they've turned the tool off. You can't opt in now as a UK user. If you've already previously opted in, they will remove your access soon.
I mean, what would you do then? Like, I don't have an iPhone, so I don't really know. We don't have these type of features on Android, but it seems to be more like the Wild West on Android sometimes when it comes to this than Apple. And also, I'm like, what are people storing that's so dodgy that you need this?
Well, yeah. I think this is the kind of question, isn't it? Like, a lot of people would be like, well, if you're that touchy about it, what's going on? But I do think there has been a big, broader discussion about people wanting to own their own data and not have access to it. And you know, we have seen historically, like, celebrities, their privacy being invaded because of iCloud hacking and stuff like that. So I can see there being cases where you want to have, you want to have that peace of mind. I think what's going to be interesting is because the home, you know, because Apple have said, all right, well, we'll turn it off for the UK.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see if other countries try and, like, have the same conversation.
Well, it's interesting as well, like, on a sort of more private sector base as well. Like, my company where I work have said we're not allowed to use Apple Intelligence.
Mm.
I don't know. It just makes me start to think, like, are people going to start getting told whether they can opt in and opt out to things like this by where they work, for example, on their, like, work devices, as well as, you know, in their, like, public and private life as well.
Yeah, I do think there's a lot more critical questions about the safety of different tools. Whereas I think before it was kind of like tech companies would develop something and everyone would be like, oh, great, this looks cool. And then they'd just kind of start using it without much caution first. I think because a lot of the time there wasn't really legitimate risk. You know, if we think about the development in the past 20 years, has been insane. But I think now people are starting to go, hang on a second, let's wait.
Yeah. The thing is, it is good to have protection in place. Mm. Like, I guess we were talking the other day, like, it's better to make something safe than to not even bother, right? Just for the sake of innovation. But it is like, where do you draw the line as well?
For sure. So I guess we'll see what happens. Our final story for the week is so cool. We both, like, saw this and we were like, we have to talk about this.
Yeah. So basically, a US startup has managed to demonstrate an airborne vehicle that it claims to be the world's first flying car. That's pretty cool.
Feels like something completely out of a TV show.
Yeah.
Imagining of the future. Like, we're finally there. We're getting flying cars. It's this company called Aleph Aeronautics, their Model Zero prototype. So you can go online and you can watch this. It is a car that, like, horizontally takes off, flies over a parked car on a public road and lands again. So it's the first real world test of the design concept. And it's, like, a little bit different from other flying car prototypes that kind of end up looking a bit like a drone, you know, like a quadcopter. It still flies with rotor blades, but they're, like, within the chassis of the car. So it looks like a normal car from the outside, but then can take off and fly.
Right. See, this sounds so futuristic.
It's so cool.
I feel
cool.
Like the stuff that we read about when we were little, like, watched on, you know, like, shows and stuff, like, is finally, like, starting to happen. Would you go in one?
Not right now. But
so you wouldn't even go in a prototype?
If they start, you know, being sold, then yeah, I'd definitely have a go.
Yeah. See, I don't know.
Would you be like, put me in, I'm ready to have a try?
I don't know, because like originally when I started hearing about Tesla and self-driving cars, for example, I was like, yeah, I'd give that a go. But now I see more and more like issues with them just randomly crashing and stuff. I'm like, do I want to be one of the test people for this?
Like maybe we wait a little bit.
We'll leave it to the dummies first.
The startup says it's a 100% electric car. It has a driving range of 320 kilometers and a flight range of around 160 kilometers. Their kind of idea is they want to produce a vehicle that's affordable for most people, not just the rich. The current Model A is priced at £237,000. So that's not quite meeting the memo there, but they've got this second model called Model Z, which they're hoping to be costed at like $35,000, so about £20,000.
That is a dramatic drop in price.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if like Model A is like flying first class and Model Z is the economy.
Yeah, but I mean, flying's flying, right? $35,000 isn't that much for a flying car.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah,
apparently they've already got 3,300 pre-orders, and I really like the design idea behind it. They wanted to make it look, you know, like a normal car. It fits into a regular driving lane. It can conform to all traffic regulatory conditions.
Yeah,
it can fit in a regular parking space and in a garage, and then it can, you know, drive around on the street. But then it can take off vertically and fly overhead. So we could have this great.
I want
one. New future.
if it's safe, I want one, basically.
Yeah.
That
sign me
so
up
cool.
for one of those pre-orders.
it sounds really cool. It sounds like it could help us get rid of all the roads as well.
Yeah. Will it cause another problem where we'll just have like lots of roads stacked on top of each other?
Yeah, or like just cars crashing and falling down. Yeah, okay, maybe not. Damn. I take it back.
One of the things I really like about it, though, is it actually looks good. It's like a really sleek, cool design. So I really appreciate that they've, you know, not only is it a proof of concept, but they're also nailing it. As we've talked about this so much about the product as well. There's no point making something that's like new technology if people just aren't going to use it because it doesn't look good.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, if you make something look good, I mean... Although a caveat to that is I don't think those Tesla Cybertrucks look good, and I still see people driving them around, which is annoying.
Yeah, but that's just a question that I think a lot of people can't answer.
Like, why? Just people jumping on the bandwagon there.
Aleph Aeronautics, watch this space for a flying car.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wrap this week's episode here for today. Thank you so much for listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief. If people want to find us on socials, where do they go, Harriet?
We are at Tech Girl Energy on TikTok, Instagram, or on YouTube Shorts. We're on Facebook as well and Threads.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.